Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
An African delegation tries to defuse the political crisis in Burkina Faso. A rights organization criticizes the Ugandan government. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. A delegation of West African leaders is in Burkina Faso trying to defuse a political crisis set off by the departure of longtime President Blaise Compaoré. The presidents of Ghana, Nigeria, and Senegal arrived in Ouagadougou today and met with Burkinabe political and religious leaders, including the country's military-appointed interim president, Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida. A reporter for VOA on the scene says the heads of state have asked politicians, religious leaders, and civil society groups to each name three candidates to lead a transitional government. Human Rights Watch today accused Ugandan forces of committing reprisal killings in tribal areas. AFP says an HRW report says as many as 100 people died last July in the western Rwenzori mountain range area. The army went in to search for gangs that had launched raids against rival tribes, but the rights group says the military carried out reprisal killings after the raids had ended. A government spokesman dismissed the allegations. The AFP News Service reports at least 18 people were killed when a bus collided with a tanker truck today near the Nile Delta city of Damanhur. The bus had been filled with high school students. The bodies of some of the dead were said to be burned beyond recognition. Therefore, investigators were unable to determine how many of the victims were children. This is VOA News. The AFP reports that suspected Boko Haram fighters robbed a bank and then stole dynamite and trucks from a French-owned cement company in Nigeria. The incidents are believed to be part of Boko Haram's effort to fund violence in the northeastern part of Nigeria. From the AFP, the government of Sierra Leone today says it sent a journalist to a maximum security prison after a guest on the man's radio program criticized the nation's president. David Tambario was host of a radio program on which a guest made critical remarks about President Ernest Bai-Koroma's handling of the Ebola crisis. A government spokesman said Barrio was jailed under an order signed by the president himself under state of emergency powers granted by Parliament in July. The pastor of a popular Nigerian church today failed to attend a coroner's inquest into the collapse of a building owned by the church. T.B. Joshua had been asked to give evidence concerning the sudden collapse of a large church guest house in which 116 people died. The preacher, known as the Prophet, had claimed that the building had been attacked by an airplane in what may have been a terrorist attack. Inspections indicated, though, that the real cause of the collapse may have been structural defects. Joshua had claimed divine guidance in the design of the building. Earlier at the inquest, an emergency official testified that Joshua's followers attacked rescue workers as they tried to reach the building after the collapse. Three Tunisian soldiers are dead following an attack today by suspected Islamists near the Algerian border. A government spokesman says gunmen attacked a bus carrying soldiers and their families in the city of El Kef. 12 people were reported wounded in the attack.
Tonight, we shook up the Senate. You shook up the Senate. Your message was heard from Nevada to Pennsylvania Avenue.
Cory Gardner, he was elected to the U.S. Senate from Colorado yesterday. As the results of the elections, opposition Republicans will regain control of the U.S. Senate and enjoy a larger majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. Ukraine today announced it will halt government funding to its eastern regions controlled by Russian-backed separatists. Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk said the cutoff of funding to parts of Donetsk and Luhansk will continue as long as they are held by what he called terrorists. Israeli police say a Palestinian has rammed a car into a crowd of pedestrians in Jerusalem in a deliberate attack. 10 people were injured, including at least 3 police officers. One of the officers later died. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Ihis Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Whether the deployment of a vaccine that's effective would have a significant impact on ending the outbreak is an open question. I think its primary immediate impact would be actually on some of the things that would happen outside of the outbreak.
That's Dr. Armand Sprecher, public health specialist with Doctors Without Borders. Details coming up.
Also in the news, three West African leaders are in Burkina Faso to push army leaders to honor their pledge to hand over power to a civilian transitional government.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, three West African leaders met today in Ouagadougou with the lieutenant colonel who took control of the government of Burkina Faso last weekend. The three presidents, Goodluck Jonathan of Nigeria, Macky Sall of Senegal, and John Mahama of Ghana, represent the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. They were trying to persuade Colonel Isaac Zida to hand over power to a civilian transitional government. Reuters reports that the three leaders recommended a one-year timetable for new elections and a return to civilian rule. The presidency was vacated last Friday when President Blaise Compaoré resigned and left the country.
While meeting in Cotonou, Benin, the World Health Organization's Africa region picked a longtime veteran to take charge of the operations in Africa. Dr. Mashidiso Moeti of Botswana will replace Dr. Louis Sambo, who resigned recently. Sambo was recently criticized in an international draft document circulating in Geneva headquarters for his handling of the Ebola crisis. Officials in Geneva have since taken direct control of the Ebola campaign in West Africa, but Moeti is expected to manage all other regional operations. Moeti previously led the epidemiology department in Botswana and the AIDS department. She previously served as the deputy regional director and as a regional advisor and headed their office in Malawi.
The Committee to Protect Journalists and the Sierra Leone Association of Journalists have protested the arrest of a radio reporter in Freetown under presidential emergency orders of the Ebola crisis. Sierra Leone police arrested David Tamborio for incitement on Monday. Chief Police Superintendent Ibrahim Karoma said Tamborio was placed in Bamenda Maximum Security Prison on an executive order of President Ernest Bai Koroma. The police chief did not identify specific charges against the reporter. Tamborio conducts popular radio programs on Citizen FM radio, in which he questioned arrest made last week following Ebola-linked riots in Kono District. He has also challenged Mr. Bai Koroma's wish to turn for a third term as president. Tamborio was accused of sedition in January, and the reporter's monologue show was previously banned for 2 months. In Madrid, the head of a hospital treating a nurse for Ebola said Teresa Romero has recovered from an Ebola infection and will be released today. The nurse contracted the virus while treating two priests who were infected in Sierra Leone. The priests died. Romero's was the first case of a patient being infected with the virus outside of Africa. She spent a month receiving hospital treatment. In China, the U.S.-based Lakeland Industries is producing 6,000 personal protective suits daily at a manufacturing plant in Shandong Province for use by health workers in West Africa. The disposable yellow garment is made of polyethylene and propylene and is completely sealed to maintain a virus-free environment for the workers. The plant manager said they plan to double their production in January.
Leading researchers and public health experts held a briefing today on the West Africa Ebola crisis. The briefing was held in the southern U.S. city of New Orleans at the annual meeting of the American Society of Tropical Medicine and Hygiene. Dr. Armand Sprecher is a public health specialist with Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF. He was asked how much of an impact an effective vaccine would have on the Ebola outbreak.
Whether the deployment of a vaccine that's effective would have a significant impact on ending the outbreak is an open question. I think its primary immediate impact would be actually on some of the things that would happen outside of the outbreak. If we had healthcare workers that were able to resume work in their healthcare centers and their hospitals and start delivering babies, doing cesarean sections, treating malaria, it may save many, many lives. The number of people that are dying of non-Ebola causes at the time is unknown. We're trying to measure it, but the suspicion is that it probably is much larger than the people that are actually dying of Ebola right now.
The MSF physician describes the state of the health care system in Liberia's capital when he visited a few months ago.
When I was in Monrovia at the end of August, all of the secondary care, all of the hospitals had stopped admitting patients. So there was no inpatient care being delivered to a city of over a million people. We can draw conclusions about how many people suffered or died because of that. Right now we're trying to measure that. And hopefully in the coming weeks we'll have a better idea of the actual cost of that. Primary care has been significantly reduced through the official outlets. And this is one of the reasons that we are undertaking the mass distribution of antimalarials to just reduce the burden from at least one disease that's contributing to all of that.
Luciana Borio is leading the U.S. Food and Drug Administration's response to the Ebola outbreak. She addressed the issue of drugs that might be used to treat Ebola.
As you know, the desire for safe and effective products is overwhelming. And although the products are in the early stages of development, they are proceeding at an unprecedented pace and scale. And FDA is determined to do all we can to facilitate and expedite development of these products and to help developers meet their goals and timelines. It's a very urgent issue, and we need to learn what helps and what hurts at the soonest possible time and in the most definitive way. It's going to be important for generations to come, and we have to get this right. I'd like to say that we have an obligation to provide a lot more than hope. We need to provide safe and effective products at the soonest available time.
Ed Cox is director of the Office of Antimicrobial Products at the FDA.
Most of the products that are being developed are in very early stages at this point in time, and there is a tremendous urgency to figure out which among these therapies will help patients and do so and do it in a way that we can get it right. We at FDA have been discussing over the last several months a number of different clinical trial designs. And clearly in this setting, we need to get to clinical trial designs that will allow us to get to the right answers quickly so that we can figure out what works and then incorporate those therapies that are found to be effective into the standard of care. We've been working a lot with our colleagues at NIAID, and they have developed a protocol that uses innovative statistical methods that allows for interim analysis to allow a winner to be declared very early for those things that demonstrate efficacy. And really, this type of trial design is novel for us. It's something different than what we've done before, but it's appropriate given what we're facing here with Ebola virus disease.
Ripley Ballou is with GlaxoSmithKline, the developer of one of the Ebola vaccine candidates now being tested. He was asked, who should pay for the vaccine research and development?
Given the early stage of this vaccine development, it's too early for us to say when and if this vaccine will be available. It obviously depends upon the data, the outcome of the clinical trials that are ongoing and will be planned, and the evaluation of those data by the regulators. As an example of what the kinds of things that are being done to accelerate this process so that we don't slow this down, we are taking, for example, an unusual step of running a phase two and a phase three program in parallel. And the FDA has agreed to review the data that come from these trials on a rolling basis, which will allow very quick decision making when data become available.
Ballou says phase two and phase three trials on the Ebola vaccine candidate have not yet started.
The International Medical Aid Group, Doctors Without Borders, also known by the acronym MSF, said the Ebola situation in the three most affected countries, Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone, are still at a crisis level. To help prevent the virus from spreading, the group has been distributing protection kits to families in Liberia. However, a big question is posed in how to properly dispose of the contaminated gear. Jose Mass is the MSF Emergency Coordinator based in the DRC. He spoke with me about the proper use of disposing of protective equipment and clothing after exposure to Ebola.
The idea behind these kits is just to prevent the family surrounding a patient or a suspect case to be infected. So the idea is to put in place all these precautions so that they are able to live their life without being at risk or minimizing the maximum possible risk. So it has to be matched with some sensitization from our teams just explaining how to use them. But the idea would be for them to use chlorine to disinfect all possible objects touched by the possible patient or suspect case, and to put on the different items like the mask, the goggles, or the gloves in order to be able to handle things without being at risk.
Now, these kits, they come in two buckets. As you say, they contain chlorine, soap, gloves, gowns, plastic bags, and a spray bottle, goggles, and mask. Is the use just a one-time use?
There are some items which are consumable and some others that can be reused. But this is not a perfect solution. I mean, the distribution of the kits, it's just to gain some time in order to allow the hospitals to host as many patients or suspect cases as possible. So the idea would be, for example, chlorine would be consumed, and hence probably in a few days it would be over. But the idea for the mask and the bucket and the rest of the items, it is that if they are disinfected with chlorine, with the solutions that have to be in place, then they could be reused for a few days. But again, this is a very temporal solution.
Once the materials are contaminated, how does the family properly dispose of it?
Depending on the surface where the Ebola virus is supposed to be impregnated, it depends on if it is an object. Normally, you would use chlorine solution of 0.5. This would kill the Ebola virus. You can use also to disinfect another solution, 0.05. But this is more used for some clothes or this kind of object if the amount of virus is not supposed to be high. If it is high, you have to always use the 0.5 solution, provided, of course, that it is not a human being. I mean, this is just for objects, these solutions. There is a third option, which would be water and soap. This is also known to kill the virus, as well as drying in the sun. After you have used the solutions, you can put all the objects or, for example, the clothes to dry in the sun, and this is also effective against the Ebola.
Once they have been treated, they can be disposed of just in the regular trash.
Usually, there are some protocols that should be followed. In order to minimize all the risks, it's not that it is advisable to dispose them as usual trash. In fact, in treatment centers, there are many different waste management procedures, and I'm pretty sure, because this information I don't have it since I was in Congo until a couple of days ago, I'm not pretty sure of how the procedures will be disposed for all the families to get rid of the waste, but it is not that they should be doing as per normal basis in unusual ways. Usually there is another procedure in place.
Also, I understand these kits are not meant to replace the protection gear that is worn in isolation centers. How do people working in isolation centers, how do they get rid of protection suits that have been contaminated?
There is protocol that you have to follow in order to undress the personal protective equipment. There are some rules that you have to follow. There is an order by which you would be taking first the goggles, then the different items. And some of the items are directly disposable. I mean, you would not reuse them again. Some of the others, after being disinfected with chlorine solutions of 0.5 or 0.05, they can be reused. But some of them, it is only for one-shot event.
Do they need help when they get out of their suits?
Usually, it is possible to do it yourself, but you have to be always accompanied by what we call, this is a buddy system. So somebody is watching you out while you get dressed or while you get undressed, and the same the other way around. So when your colleague is getting dressed or undressed, you should be watching him up in order to prevent from making mistakes that is usual when you are tired or when you have been in the treatment center for a couple of hours.
Is there someone else who is watching the two buddies?
There is someone else who is usually somebody in charge of disinfecting, in charge of decontaminating all the different items and pointing out which would be the next step to take.
That was Jose Mas, MSF Emergency Coordinator. He spoke with me from Barcelona, Spain. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiyis Wuhib, 21 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Three West African leaders are in Burkina Faso to push army leaders to honor their pledge to hand over power to a civilian transitional government. And the World Health Organization's Africa region has picked a longtime veteran to take charge of operations in Africa. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
The World Health Organization says the ongoing polio vaccination campaign is facing resistance in Central African countries. The United Nations has been assisting six Central African countries in synchronized vaccinations after Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea reported more than a dozen cases of the wild polio virus in less than 3 years. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from Yaoundé on what is slowing down global efforts to eradicate the crippling childhood virus.
Healthcare workers deployed to vaccinate children at homes, schools, markets and churches said they met stiff resistance to giving the inoculations due to misinformation and suspicion. Here in Cameroon, vaccination agent Ngambi Pierre tells VOA that he struggled in vain to convince a pastor of the Holy Ghost Revival Church in Eastern Cameroon who said his faith is against vaccinations as solutions to health problems.
C'est beaucoup plus profond puisque ça touche déjà les problèmes de conscience. Certains pasteurs instruits, éduqués, avertis.
He says the problem is becoming complex because certain parents are heeding calls from some religious leaders and refusing to have their children vaccinated. The root of the problem is misinformation, fear, and suspicion. Local media reports that some Nigerian refugees in northern Cameroon have refused the polio vaccine, claiming that it is a ploy by developed countries to inject people with chemicals that reduce fertility in order to reduce the population of Muslims. The director of the WHO Global Polio Eradication Initiative, Dr. Hamid Jafiri, says it is imperative to combat these mistaken beliefs with proven medical benefits across the globe.
I want to assure the families that this is a very, very safe vaccine. Every year, more than 2 billion doses of this vaccine is administered to children. So I would request the families that they should cooperate and in fact support the work of vaccinators who are coming door to door or meet them in the market. Because unless the families cooperate, unless the district administration cooperates, until the governors cooperate, it's going to be difficult to get rid of this virus.
Until a few years ago, polio had been eradicated in all but a few countries: Nigeria, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. But conflict-driven mass refugee movements and poor sanitation have been mostly responsible for the re-emergence of polio in the Middle East and Africa, including Iraq, Syria, Somalia, and Ethiopia. The Global Polio Eradication Initiative says Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea have each reported 5 new cases this year. Polio is a virus which mainly strikes children under 5 years of age and can lead to irreversible paralysis and, in up to 10% of cases, death. Close to 30 years ago, polio afflicted more than 350,000 people a year. Since the WHO created the Global Polio Eradication Initiative in 1988, the number of cases of polio has declined by 99% to just 416 cases reported in 2013. Cameroon's public health minister, André Mamafouda, says despite the challenges, they are determined to eradicate the crippling disease.
J'invite tout le monde, enfants et adultes, à se faire vacciner pour permettre à nos enfants d'être renforcés contre les maladies.
He says he is inviting everyone to make sure that all children are vaccinated, because by so doing, lives are saved and preventable diseases are avoided. He adds that people should open their doors and receive vaccination teams. Last year, the Global Polio Eradication Initiative launched a new strategic plan to wipe out polio by 2018. More than $4 billion has been pledged to the effort, which requires that every child on earth be vaccinated. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Chaka Saleh, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.
In Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment. I offer you what you need. Free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa, every Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 2000, and 2100 UTC.
On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.